Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. 1 week from today, 5-year-old Justice Network turns into True Crime Network. What's behind the verdict for this multicast channel? Titan executive Brian Weiss explains when he joins me next. For many critics, P-Valley is one of the best new drama series this summer and this year. You're about to hear a big reason why next half hour when star Brainy Evans comes with us as an internet radio exclusive. And for a closer, we'll hear Margaret Derricks, considered TV's best choreographer. Her latest work appears on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She's on our stage after the top of the next hour. Also ahead, Make TV and NYC Again, our new classic trivia winner, and our latest classic trivia question, all in an hour. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book and more when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us on this heat wave afternoon here in the New York tri-state area. Happy to have you aboard. 92 degrees at the top of the hour, and you are right on time for the program all about television. First of 2 90-minute editions this week, and I promise you we got a good one for you. So stay with us, especially if you're in a heat wave area. And speaking of heat wave areas, if you are in one, if you have to go out at all between now and the end of the day, please take your time, go slow, get water or other fluids before you, check up on your loved ones, and take it easy. And of course, wear that mask, be social distancing, and so on and so forth. And of course, stay tuned to Blog Talk Radio. We will keep you company. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. It's so simple. Give us a call. How do you do it? You pick up the phone, you dial this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is very much open for business and ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you and us. Titan's Brian Weiss is live with us from Atlanta after these news notes. For the first time since late winter, scripted and unscripted television series can be produced in New York City again. Credit goes to NYC joining the rest of New York State in Phase 4 of reopening activity today. No word yet on which currently made or new series will start taping or filming first. When city officials suspended TV production due to the coronavirus crisis, at least 75 scripted series alone were in business throughout New York City's five boroughs. In a recent Deadline Hollywood Daily interview, NYC Media Entertainment Commissioner Anda Castillo said it was, and this is her words, a safe bet TV production will ramp way up next month. We'll keep you posted. Growing star Yehuda Shahidi and mother Kara are now in the TV production biz. Seventh Son is the venture and has an arrangement with ABC Studios for scripted and nonfiction projects. Grownish will enter its fourth season of Freeform, or I should say on Freeform, next year. And post-career Stephen Canals is working on 81 Words, an FX miniseries about doctors dealing with how homosexuality was defined in the 1970s. And then his news notes for today. Throughout our 13-year history, we have followed not only services available basically on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, but also what they call multicast channels. Channels are available mostly simultaneously as a digital signal on your TV stations, or as a cable channel. And one of the first to get into the game in a big way 5 years ago was Justice Network. It was put together by former executives of Discovery and Nat Geographic. And in fact, one of Nat Geo's former executives, Steve Shipman, was on this program 5 years ago to talk about Justice Network. Well, at least from today, Justice Network is going to become True Crime Network, and it's going to expand what it does. And to tell us how and why, let's go live to Atlanta and speak with our first guest from Tegna, the TV station group that owns True Crime and other multicast services, Executive Brian Weiss. Brian, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the invite.
It's a pleasure. Before we get into the transition, how has Justice Network evolved over the last 5 years?
Well, it's gone very well. And Simon, one thing I just want to applaud you on is for being one of the very few people to identify early the trend happening in the multicast world. You know, our collection of networks, and I say this about my peers as well in the industry, some might call them competitors, have been somewhat ignored traditionally by sort of the large trade press as not being on par with cable networks or those that are distributed primarily on satellite. And what I can tell you is that when we started the networks 5 years ago, if you took a look at the data of how many people were using over-the-air antennas, that number was about 10% of the country, as identified by Nielsen. But just 5-6 years later, that number is now just over 20%. So the population using an antenna as a primary vehicle for watching television has doubled. But if you add on to the fact that Nielsen also identifies that one-third of American households have at least one antenna in their household, even if it is not their primary viewing experience, a la they use cable or streaming or other services, you're looking at a third of people. That is an enormous number of television homes, close to 40 million television homes using over-the-air antenna. And so it has brought us a great wealth of viewers and allowed us to purchase, you know, much newer programming, much fresher programming. But I think the key question, the key point of your question that you just asked is how has it evolved? And I think that's really the nexus of why we announced our switch to the True Crime Network. If you took a look at our schedule 5 years ago, quite a bit of the wheel was programmed with patrol shows, right? So those were not shows like Cops, but they were patrol-driven shows, things like Ocean Force or Beach Patrol or Alaska State Troopers, which showed police officers in interesting situations and the interactions that sometimes they got into with often hostile citizens. And what we found over the last 5 years through Nielsen data, through survey data, through audience feedback, is that while those patrol shows were valued by our audience, what they really wanted, what they really craved was what we call true crime, you might call murder mystery, whodunit type shows. And the benefit of those shows is that they keep people very long, much longer than patrol shows. You may watch a patrol show for 5 minutes to see what happens in the particular encounter, but you're much more likely to watch a whodunit murder mystery where you don't find the result of a case until the last 60 or 90 seconds of the show. And so that is why we've really evolved the network away from patrol and towards this true crime brand.
Mm-hmm. So when this transition happens, how will true crime be defined on this service? And then we're going to get to the smart TV service in a bit. But as far as the multicast channel, as it compare what it currently stands on, how is true crime going to showcase true crime?
Yeah, so if you already look at our schedule, Simon, you will see, and you can see it currently on JusticeNetworkTV.com and soon, as of next Monday, on TrueCrimeNetworkTV.com. If you already look at the shows that we have on our network, we have already effectively gone 24/7 murder mystery programming. And so, you know, those can be anything from, you know, forensics, you know, forensic scientists trying to piece together what happened at a crime scene to, you know, shows about bizarre murders that may have taken place, but a very forensic feel to the network rather than patrol, rather than court. We're less interested in that. We find that our audience is less interested in that. And they're much more interested in sort of how these sometimes dark crimes happen and how those people are brought to justice. So the programming we've already evolved really over the last several years to this point. And we just felt that basically the Justice Network brand it no longer matched what we were showing on the air. If you looked at the Justice brand, it was Jay with a police shield, the colors blue. All this evokes sort of imagery of police, which is fine. We support the police still, but this is an evolution to more of this sort of mystery content, which I think our audience has shown that they're much more excited about. One thing I would also add about the pivot to True Crime Network is that as part of Tegna, as some of your viewers may not be aware, the Justice Network was launched independently 5 years ago, but it was acquired last summer by Tegna. And so Tegna has an absolute trove, a wealth of mystery investigative type content. at any of its station libraries. And so what we're doing right now is going through a process to pull those out to be able to tell those stories on True Crime Network, as well as through podcasts, which you'll also be able to find on our website and forthcoming app. So True Crime Network is no longer just a multicast network, but also a streaming service, a collection of podcasts, eventually news, and potentially other things like events or other opportunities.
You anticipated that my next question is, you know, Tegna is one of the largest station groups in the country. It also has been one of the four running station group leaders in terms of developing original programming for national syndication or for national distribution on other stations. So how much, let's say, if you can say a percent of, like, what percent of Tegna material from your stations do you see getting on True Crime Network?
Well, at first, it will be very little. You know, we're working through a process right now to begin to pull those archives and really identify what the best stories are over the last, in some cases, 30 years of station archives. One thing I would note, and Simon, I'm sure you can appreciate this, is that a lot of that content is still on physical tapes, has not been, not exclusively been digitized to make it easy to access and edit into a show. And obviously with COVID, that makes it difficult when there are so few people in the office actually able to pull tapes. But we are in the process of pulling those right now. We have surfaced about a dozen specials from our stations, from our sister stations throughout the Tegna portfolio that have given us really good mystery specials that will be featured on our app. And as we see the traction that those gain within the streaming service, that will sort of depend, you know, that will sort of illuminate whether we should make an investment to produce a ton of original content for the network. One thing I can tell you is that right now we have thousands of hours in our library that we show on the network that we rotate in and out of. And so even if we were able to produce, you know, a really good curated selection of specials, you might be talking about 50 to 100 hours a year of originally produced content, and that still will be very valuable. We would promote that heavily and show that on a feature time. But it's safe to say that with thousands of hours currently in our library, we really do need to feed the beast with rerun content that we purchase from syndicators.
We're talking about what is now Justice Network, and 1 week from today will become True Crime Network, a multicast channel presented on TV stations all over the country as a digital signal or as a cable channel. And it is, as in the words of our guest, Brian Weiss, executive attendant that oversees True Crime, and another service called Quest, we're going to talk about a little later this half hour. It's becoming a 24/7 murder mystery programming service. And there'll be a separate service coming to smart TV sets and smart devices near you as well. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Brian joins us live from Atlanta, Georgia, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abbott will be live from New York, first of our two 90-minute episodes this week. Happy to have you aboard. By the way, 2 weeks from today, we kick off year 14 on the air. So we're happy to have you with us. So if you have a question or comment for Brian, ring the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Finally, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, our second 90 edition, ISP brings back its longest-running series, The Cowboy Way. We'll talk about that and what other original shows are in the hopper of that network with Executive Vice President Hayes Talbert. And then, a new network is going to be running on smart TV sets and smart devices that was actually announced a couple of years ago. It's from a company called Synedigium. They are one of the top new players in the world of smart TV distributed programming services. They've got at least 9 in operation. Their next one is called My Time Movie Network. It's aimed at women. It will premiere next month. And that's not all. They're working on a multicultural service with original programming that will come on early next year. We will speak to the person that makes Synedigium's world of smart TV networks happen, the president of that division, Eric Opekta. Plus, we'll showcase a brand new service that just launched called Weather Spy. It's a mix of live weather updates and a very offbeat programming mix. We'll talk to one of the people involved with that service. All coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, what about this spin-off network that's for smart TV sets and smart devices? What kind of programming will that have? How differentiated will the two services be?
It's a great question, Simon. So one thing that's really important for people to understand is that what we show right now on the linear broadcast network, that linear feed will not be available on our app. The app will be a standalone video on demand service. So that's very important for people to understand. Right now, the True Crime Network, or Justice Network as it is presently, is a lean-back experience. You turn it on, you sit, you sort of set it and forget it, right? With the True Crime Network streaming app, it will be an AVOD experience, or advertising-supported video on demand, which will allow viewers to select their choice from hundreds of episodes of really great content. Most of that content will be some of the favorite shows that they're able to watch on the current linear broadcast network. But some of those shows will be stuff that has never, you know, never hit our air. A lot of it will be international. We are working with a number of different distributors to surface really high quality, brand new, high definition content, you know, that hasn't aired on our network before. And we'll be, you know, we're sort of cutting new deals specifically for the streaming app. So the way that I like to think about it is a True Crime Network app is really one place. It is one destination for their fascination. So if you are interested in true crime content of any kind, whether that is true crime shows, true crime news and short form video content, true crime podcasts, or other types of things, as I mentioned, like events, it will be in this app as a one-stop experience. So effectively, we are the platform for lots of true crime content, whether it is produced by Tegna or by any other third party. So there will be hundreds of hours to start to choose from, and there will be 8 original podcasts that are podcast series that are produced by our partners within Tegna called Vault Studios. All of that will be bundled into this app experience, and we look forward to growing that from several hundred hours to 600 or 700 hours by the end of this year.
When Steve Shipman was on this program in Justice Network's early days, he said that one of the most important elements of the network were crime prevention tips, tips that would be presented throughout the day. They were made especially for the network, and it was his hope that they would lead to a decline in crime around the country and having people be more safe and more secure. What is the status of those segments in this new world of True Crime Net?
Yeah, great question, Simon. So the good news is we are going to continue that very important initiative that is called our Be Safe initiative. It features 3 different segments every single hour. Those are safety tips provided by the Atlanta Police Department in partnership with them. We also work with the U.S. Marshals Service and the FBI to surface wanted fugitives in our markets. And the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, we show missing children in each of our markets. We are going to continue that initiative because you can't have a network constantly devoted to the topic of crime without talking, you know, without trying to make a difference and trying to help that along. I will tell you that the Be Safe initiative has generated a ton of support from our audience. We do a survey every 6 months where we ask, you know, our audience for opinions on various elements of the network, everything from their favorite shows, how they get us, et cetera. But we also asked them about that Be Safe initiative, and it has gotten in tremendously positive feedback from the viewers. So we are going to maintain that. We're also looking for new ways to enhance it with new safety tips that better reflect our current world, that could be COVID-related, that could be you know, interactions with law enforcement, et cetera, and we're speaking actively with the Atlanta Police Department to try to refresh some of those. But yes, we will continue that initiative, and it's very important to us and Tegna.
Mm-hmm. One other true crime question, given what is going on around the country right now with the whole issue of racial justice and civil rights really coming to the fore in different ways, has there been any thinking about trying to inject more programming that deals with issues of civil rights cases, issues of racism, crimes that have a racial overtone to them?
It's a really important question, Simon, and here's what I would say. Our network is devoted to be an entertainment network, and we know our lane, which is that we show very high-quality, entertaining product that has been developed by very large distributors over the last several years. That is the case for both True Crime Network or Quest Network or anything else that we work on. But we also have a phenomenally talented group of thousands of journalists across the country that work for our stations. And each and every one of our Tegna stations is producing specials, is producing discussions. Certainly, they're just regular newscasts, have commentary about those types of issues. And we're using those on our social channels, that sort of thing. We're also talking about the potential of a special that is hosted locally here in Atlanta. Obviously, this has been a hotbed of some of those issues, both recently and, you know, over centuries at this point. So Atlanta is a very good place for that dialogue. So we're working on some of those things where we can play a role as the distribution partner, meaning we would showcase some of those conversations. But we just do not feel in a news company, it is not our charter to have those conversations. We're going to leave it to the professionals. And I will tell you, my colleagues at Tegna have done a tremendous job covering the topic fairly and really having substantive conversations about those issues.
Tegna executive Brian Weiss is our guest this first half hour on Tomorrow Utilize this Monday afternoon, July 2020. Son Appleben with you live from New York. Brian's in Atlanta, and if you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with him, make the call go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04BN. Coming up, we have a very big hour in store for you. In our next half hour, we have a live interview exclusive with one of the stars of one of the hot new series of this summer and this year, P-Valley on Starz, Brandi Evans. If you haven't heard about this series, it is getting raves all over the place. And then in our final half hour, we've got the person many people consider to be TV's best choreographer. Her latest work, her award-winning dances for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Margaret Derrick. She is the only choreographer to be winning 3 consecutive Emmy Awards and 5 consecutive MTV Movie Awards. She's won awards both inside and outside the TV and the dance community, and we'll have her live from California in our final half hour. One thing, Brian, that multicast channels has done has really taken station groups like yours and Sinclair and Nexstar and Gray and others and made them national programming players. True crime is not the only network yet. You also have Quest, which is a science nature service. What's the status of that service, and where do you see that going?
It's been tremendous, Simon. It's actually growing extremely rapidly. Its audience, in terms of its number of impressions, has blown us away. It has beat every expectation that we set out in 2018 when we created the plan for Quest, and it's doing really well. It has been met with a very large audience. What's different about Quest as compared to the current Justice Network, soon to be True Crime Network, is that people, Justice Network has a perhaps smaller audience in each market, but a very loyal audience, one that will watch hours worth of, you know, they will effectively binge watch this type of content because it is this, you know, sort of true crime content that keeps you on the edge of your seat. It keeps you, you know, until the very last minute, and then you know you're going to get, you know, the exact same experience within the next hour. So that audience has stayed with us. You know, their time spent viewing is off the charts in terms of the Justice Network audience. What we find with Quest is that actually it appeals to a broader volume of people. It is just a much wider audience. You know, sort of the audience is much more wide, but they tend to spend a little bit less time with us, but that's okay. You know, it appeals a little bit more towards a male audience as opposed to Justice, which currently skews female, and that's good for us. We want to have a product for each different demographic. It's been very good for our sales team. And what we found, you know, just as we found with Justice Network, where we've gone very deep and very aggressive at this sort of true crime mystery type content. What we found with Quest is that the vertical that people really seem to love is the how it's done or how it's made type content. So we show things like Modern Marvels, we show Factory Made, we show Mega Movers, Shipping Wars. All of these things, all these shows, sort of show you a process of how something is built. And it keeps you to the end because you want to see the conclusion, the final, you know, nut being tightened on the bolt, if you will. And it's been really fascinating to just better understand that the audience really craves that type of how it's done, how it's made type content. Whereas we also show things like military history, ancient history. We tend to show nature shows. All that stuff has been part of our show portfolio. But we're coming to the consensus, just as we did around the year two or three mark of Justice, of what our audience really wants on Quest. And it's that how it's done, how it's made type stuff that our audience really craves. As we become more devoted to that, more committed to that type of content offering, our ratings have hit high water marks basically every month since we've really gone aggressive towards that vertical.
Brian, before we go, what kind of a future do you see for multicast channels at your company, especially given the rollout now of next-gen television using ATSC 3.0 technology to expand how many multicast channels you can have, how many other kinds of services you can have, interactive content and advertising, product ordering, emergency alert services, all kinds of things that would take your station group into all sorts of new areas?
Sure. Well, I will say very much so that the company is very bullish on the growth of the over-the-air viewer. And so, you know, it's no secret that we were acquired, for a decent sum last year because Tegna has seen this trend of people embracing over-the-air television. The quality of programming, the quality of signal has improved enormously over the last 5 and 10 years. And so, we continue to look at avenues where we might pursue a third or more networks. That is, there's nothing official to announce right now, but we are always looking at those. And what I would say, Simon, to your question about ATSC 3.0, you know, right now my group, which primarily runs these entertainment networks and the streaming services that go along with them, what we're focused on really is ATSC 1.0, only because every TV set in America can currently take an ATSC 1.0 signal. And the really nice benefit, I will give it to the engineer, I will tip my hat to the engineering community in the broadcast world. They have maxed out what can be done with 1.0 transmission, which is the current standard, that can really allow you in many cases to have 5 or 6 sub-channels coming off of your main signal, which has really allowed us to gain distribution quickly for our second network Quest, as well as, you know, begin laying the foundation for a possible third network. So we're really bullish on that. You know, ATSC 3.0, it is a really interesting opportunity. It presents a lot of engineering and logistical challenges that I am not in the room for. But I will say that as that standard rolls out, it may take a while for all the TV sets out there to be able to receive that type of content. But I think what it shows, as you can see with basically every major broadcaster really working quite tirelessly on that solution, it shows very much that the broadcast world has taken its future in its hands. It really wants to be able to create this almost cable-like ecosystem with high def and even 4K channels available at your fingertips, for free. That's an enormous value proposition for the consumer. And as that unfolds over the next several years, we will definitely be there to offer really amazing programming options.
1 week from today, Justice Network becomes True Crime Network all over the country. So check your local listings if that network is available in your area. Also coming up will be a brand new service, also known as True Crime Network, differentiated, and that will be running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices near you. For more details about the service online, currently, you can go to justicenetworktv.com. As of next Monday, it will be truecrimenetworktv.com. It's justicenetworktv.com from now until next Monday. Then it becomes truecrimenetworktv.com, all put together by Tegna, one of the largest TV station groups in the country. Brian Weiss, Tegna's multicast executive, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with the transition, and hopefully a lot more in the multicast realm coming from your place down the road.
Thank you, Simon. Really appreciate it.
Same here, Brian. Take care. Enjoy the week. Brian Weiss from Tegna, joining us live from Atlanta, Georgia. More from our tailgates coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you are a fan of Neil Gaiman, one of the most imaginative writers all over the place, well, here's great news. His super creation, The Sandman, will become a Netflix series not too far down the road. But you don't have to wait to enjoy The Sandman, because now it's available in audio form, and you can get it through Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and by far inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen on any device, and whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televisors. Audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, special wellness material, and a 1 month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. That is a steal of a deal. So, if you would like to hear how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you love can hear the world, makes a great gift, by the way, for any occasion, just go to audibletrial.com/televisors. Audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up on our next hour, the Emmy-winning choreographer Margaret Derricks, our new classic trivia winner, and our new classic trivia question. So keep your thinking caps ready because you can win some nice prizes before the end of this upcoming hour. But first, we hope to have from the new hit series on Starz P-Valley, star Brandi Evans. That's coming up after you pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are Texas Best Internet Radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Get the latest information on the pandemic from anywhere in the world, plus original podcasts and other audio material. All original and all running 24/7. The Coronavirus News Channel, coming your way. TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to Mark Tomorrow We Televise, coming your way for 90 minutes this Monday afternoon. It's a heat wave afternoon here in the New York metro area, 90 degrees at the top of the hour. We're now in phase four of the reopening of NYC, which means TV production can come back starting today. Simon Adler, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. We are hoping to go shortly and hear from the star of the popular new P-Valley series on Starz, Brandi Evans. So, Brandi, if you hear us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or anyway, from Starz, you can hook us up with Brandi immediately. Do so, and we'll make it happen. And if you have a question or comment for Brandi, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And coming up later in this hour ahead, we will have the Emmy-winning choreographer, Margaret Derricks, whose latest work you can see on the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She is the only choreographer to win 3 back-to-back Emmy Awards, 5 back-to-back MTV Movie Awards, and a whole lot of other honors. She'll join us live from California. So while we wait for Brandi, let's give you our classic trivia question of the week. And I'm happy to tell you that for the second week in a row, we have a winner. And that winner is Stephen Feldman of Jersey City, New Jersey. Stephen Feldman of Jersey City, New Jersey. Congratulations, Stephen. He got the answers this morning. And for that, he is going to win a Peacock launch commemorative jigsaw puzzle, well, I say over 500 pieces, and a Peacock activity book. The question we had over the last week or so was this. Name two of the co-stars of the long-running Lifetime series, Army Wives. His answer, Catherine Bell, now in her latest season on The Good Witch on Hallmark Channel, and Sterling K. Brown. Yes, this was Sterling K. Brown's debut in television, in a big way, before his Emmy-winning turn on This Is Us on NBC. Some of the other people involved were Wendy Davis, Kim Delaney, Kelly Williams, Jeremy Davidson, a whole bunch of people over the 7 seasons that Army Wives was on Lifetime, 2007 to 2013. So Stephen Thelma of Jersey City, New Jersey, congratulations on being our second weekly Classic Trivia winner in a row. And we're going to get the prizes out to you sometime tomorrow, so hopefully you'll get them before the end of the week, early next week at the latest. So thanks for playing. And if you didn't have a chance to play, stay tuned, because in our next half hour, we have a brand new Classic Trivia question. And if you are first with the correct answer, we have another pair of prizes. If you are a big fan of Discovery Channel, especially their Shark Weeks, which is coming up, by the way, next week, I believe, we have a real treat for you. We have Discovery's new real-life ocean sticker book with over 400 stickers, yes, sharks included. And we have a book that was based on a TED Talk, How We Live on Mars by Stephen L. Petrenic. So those can be yours if you know the answer to our next Classic Trivia question, and we'll have that for you in our next half hour. Again, we're waiting to hear from Brandi Evans, who is the star of the critically acclaimed new Starz series, P-Valley. When P-Valley came out, this is what Rotten Tomatoes has had to say about it, which has, by the way, a 100% rating on that website. A stunning lyrical piece of neon noir, P.I. explores the unseen lives of strippers in Mississippi through Katori Hall's singular gaze, celebrating the beauty of the craft without sugarcoating the challenges. And the High Reporter went even one better, saying it is one of this year's best series. And Brandi Evans is the lead star of that series, which has a great ensemble cast. We are awaiting her right now. We heard she was available today. So, Brandi, if you're hearing us or anybody from STARS in PR, if you can connect us with Brandi, that would be great. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Go right ahead and make that connection. And as soon as we hear from Brandi and I see she's ready to go, we will have her aboard. In the meantime, that gives me the opportunity to do two comments, at least one, maybe two. One deals with the big news of the day today, and the second deals with the big news of last week. If this was a Friday show, it would definitely qualify as a takeaway of the week. So let's get to that. We'll see how far it goes. And by the way, if you want to respond to it, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. As mentioned in our news notes, today, for the first time since late winter, March to be exact, TV can be produced again in New York City. It's taken a while, a long while, but as of today, with New York City finally joining the rest of New York State in phase four of the reopening, the retransformation, whatever you want to call it, of this state, New York City can resume television production, film, tape, scripted, unscripted. We've said this a number of times over the last couple months. When scripted television production was stopped, put under lockdown because of the coronavirus pandemic, there were, according to local authorities, at least 75 scripted shows in production. All-time record. Not only that, but the city was already working on two major new facilities to dramatically expand that situation. One is the Made in New York Production Center, based in Industry City in Brooklyn, that was supposed to launch before the end of the year. And then separately, Netflix was working on a six-stage studio complex, also in Brooklyn, in the Waynesburg section. That also is supposed to be completed by the end of this year. Now, technically speaking, both projects should still be under construction because under phase two or three, construction projects were allowed. But now it is really nice to see New York City have the shot at getting back into production and joining parts of California, joining other countries, joining Atlanta, Georgia, where Tyler Perry's at work on his series for BET and BET Plus, and other places around the country. There is, of course, a question about how fast New York City production will ramp up. I hope it's really fast because, frankly, this city needs all the activity it can get. When you have television production going, hundreds of thousands of jobs are involved, directly and indirectly. And in recent weeks, they have been in danger of not coming back or not coming because other places were reopened with the pandemic situations that they had, whether in Georgia or Florida or Alabama or Mississippi or North and South Carolina or California or et cetera, et cetera. The latest word from Ann Epifio, as I mentioned in the news notes last half hour, according to a Deadline Hollywood Daily interview, is that it would be a safe bet that production would ramp up next month. Here's hoping it does, big time, because there's a lot riding on it. The broadcast networks in particular, they could not get pilot production done in New York. And we know that there were a bunch of pilots, including the Equalizer pilot, with Queen Latifah in the lead as executive producer, that was going to be shot here in New York. Now CBS can go forward and do it. And I'm sure there were other pilots that were also out to be done in New York that now can have their shot in the five boroughs. Now, obviously, it is going to take a lot of inventiveness, a lot of creativity, because of how many people can be used in production, because of social distancing, because of how production space has to be used, people wearing masks at least to and from the scenes, and so forth. But for now, I'm happy that production is going to happen. Let's have it happen quick. We could generate a lot of jobs and a lot of business for New York City. Because if we don't, it's going to go somewhere else. And here's hoping that both New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York Mayor Bill de Blasio don't throw a monkey wrench into the situation. We can't turn back. Got to go forward. This is it, people. The TV you view is going to be determined a lot by how fast New York gets up, New York City gets back up to speed in scripted and unscripted work. And I'm putting my money on the New York production community. It's a good community. It's very inventive. They've risen to the occasion before, and they will rise again. And they need all the space they can get and all the liberty they can get. So once again, to the government officials, don't you dare throw a monkey wrench. Let's move forward and forward and forward from here. We're still waiting for Brandy Evans from Stars' P Valley to join us. Brandy, if you hear us or somebody from Stars is hearing our show, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that Brandy is ready to go on, and she's ready on my computer screen, we'll put her on the air. So the first subject I want to address was the topic of New York City getting back into production. The second topic I want to address is one that, if we have the opportunity on Friday, it would be our takeaway of the week. And that is the various initiatives that CBS put in place last week to develop more opportunities in television for people of color. Between Monday and Wednesday of last week, 48-hour period, CBS did two initiatives that I think could go down as mileposts in the effort to expand diversity way beyond where it's now. The first initiative that was announced a week ago was the decision to devote at least 25% of their development budget on new proposed television series for the 2021-22 television season on broadcast to projects overseen and created by people of color. That in itself is a big investment. When you consider that about 100-150 projects a year are put into development, active development by a broadcast network, we're talking about ABC, CBS, NBC, and to a lesser extent Fox and the CW, a heavy-duty initiative. And that's at minimum. But more importantly, for both current and new series alike, CBS made the commitment that at least for that season, 40% of the writers working on current and new scripted series would be people of color. And that would increase up to 50% the following broadcast season. 40% 2021-22, 2022-23, 50% at minimum. And CBS would put special barometers in place to make sure that happens. That itself is a milestone. Big, no question about it. And then 48 hours later, the second explosion broke. CBS Television Studios, which is CBS's production company, doing not only projects for CBS and CBS All Access and the Viacom CBS cable channel, but for the likes of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and now HBO Max and Peacock, etc., Apple TV Plus, began a project with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, an ongoing programming initiative to create an infrastructure for ongoing Program Creation, Development, and Presentation. From the get-go. Now think about that. We're talking about one of the biggest advocacy organizations in the world, NAACP, making a deal with a television network or television network's production infrastructure to create a major venture highlighting new work by people of color, especially African Americans. And we're talking about an infrastructure that would not only produce shows for CBS, CBS All Access, the Viacom CBS family of cable channels, but for the likes of a Netflix and an Amazon and a Hulu and Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus and BET Plus and so on and so forth and other services available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we're talking about not a one-shot or a one-year deal or two-year deal. We're talking about an ongoing infrastructure, an ongoing living, breathing venture that would pull together all sorts of new talent of color and would in essence be their laboratory that would be guaranteed a shot at being presented somewhere. Believe me, this could go down as one of the greatest landmark deals in television history and in the effort, the ongoing effort to expand diversity beyond where it's now. And it's already in a very important place. By the way, speaking of P-Valley, you should know it's as diverse as it gets. The program was put together by Katori Hall, a person of color. Many of the producers are people of color. The talent is people of color in front of the camera. And all of the directors, and most of all the directors are women, and many of them are people of women of color. And by the way, this is the second such situation that Starz has put together in recent months, the other one being Hightown, whose creator, Rebecca Carter, was on this program over a month ago. Believe me, this is a very big deal. And I want you to know that today we emailed both CBS and the NAACP, and we would like to get executives from both organizations to come on this program and explain to you this venture. You really want to hear about this. This is a monumental breakthrough for television. And I wish I could end the story there. However, I can't. Because in between those two initiatives, Viacom CBS got itself into a controversy with a star that it had raised really from the cradle the last 15 years. And I'm talking, of course, about Nick Cannon, who got his start on Nickelodeon, who has served that network well. At one point, he honorary chaired T-Nick, his spinoff service. He put together the Halo Awards, an annual awards ceremony honoring teenagers who do great things in their community for the benefit of others and not just themselves, and who has turned into a wonderful talent hosting America's Got Talent, currently as host and executive producer of the Fox sensation, The Masked Singer, and was on his way to launching in September a daily talk show from Harlem using the studios of the former BET daily series 106 and Park. But the Viacom CBS and the Viacom CBS relationship came to a screeching halt because of an incident involving Cannon's podcast, where he spoke in what some people consider derogatory terms about the relationship of African Americans and Jews. According to CBS, or Viacom CBS officials, they had conversations with Nick when they learned about this situation. They had conversations with Cannon, and they came away thinking that he was unapologetic. And they decided then and there, that's it. Hands clean, no more relationship. Nick Cannon's response, which was put together in a long Facebook missive, was the opposite. he came across as very remorseful, that he realized he made a big error in judgment, and that he had a lot to learn about the relationship of African Americans and Jews and the culture between the two, and especially to learn more about Jewish culture. He came across my Facebook missive as being very appreciative of Viacom, now Viacom CBS, the breaks he got from executives like Simon Zardani and Marva Smalls, and that he was incredibly remorseful, and that he was shocked that Viacom CBS would not only not give him a chance to show how remorseful he was, but that also they would not allow him, not being part of the Viacom CBS family anymore, to get ownership of one of the creations that he made, Wild and Out, the long-running series on MTV. Not only that, but Cannon also said that he tried to reach out to Sherry Redstone, the chairwoman of CBS and Viacom, not Viacom CBS, to say how sorry he was, and no response. Since then, Cannon has had more to say about the incident, and he has made peace with the incident with both Fox and Lionsgate, Fox being the presenters of The Masked Singer on broadcast on the network, and Lionsgate, whose Denmark Mercury subsidiary is syndicating his proposed daytime talk show. And apparently, Fox is clear that Cannon's remorse is genuine and that they definitely want him to stay. So he will continue as the host and producer of The Masked Singer through its new season. With Lionsgate, they basically said, Nick, we believe you. We're still in on your talk show. And we want you to take a year off. Rather than start the show in September, take a year off. Really get to know the relationship that African Americans and Jews have with each other and the Jewish culture. And really show us that you are indeed remorseful, that you really understand what you did, and that you really do want to make amends. And Cannon agreed. So that's why his daytime talk show will not premiere in September. It will premiere next September. The point I want to make is this. I really do believe that Nick Cannon is one remorseful person. And I think he deserves a second chance at Viacom CBS. I think it's unfortunate that a 15-year relationship that has worked so well for both sides went down the drain so fast. If Nick Cannon wasn't remorseful, I'd understand it. But I really get a sense over this last week that he really wants to make amends and he wants to further the conversation in a better, more diverse, inclusive way for everybody. And he really wants to take the steps to cause that. He really wants to be in action on this, not just in words. I really hope that Viacom CBS has second thoughts about this. And I say that because in the 15 years that he has been part of this organization, he's done it proud. Halo Awards, Team Nick, everything he's been asked to do, he did, and he's really increased diversity, and he's gone to the max for Nickelodeon and for Viacom CBS. And I really hope that there's a change of heart at Viacom CBS. I think it would be great. I think it would be a great thing on both sides if there was. And maybe Sherry Redstone should be involved. I know from meeting with her last year at a Paley Center for Media event that she sees diversity as a number one priority. And I think that's what, in fact, sparked the initiative that were announced last week. The Script Development Initiative, the Writers' Room Initiative, and then the NAACP joint venture. I really, really hope Viacom CBS, many of you executives out there listening, give them a break. Give Nick Cannon a second try. I really think you'll be well rewarded for it. And we'll keep you posted. If there is any developments, by the way, on the Nick Cannon situation, we will keep you posted. Well, I'm sorry to tell you that Brandi Evans is not going to be with us today, and apparently there may have been a breakdown in terms of her getting on. We will find out what that was, and we will have her on the air next week. So we will talk with the folks at Starz, and we'll see to it that she's on the show next week. In the meantime, you can catch the third episode of P-Valley this coming Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Starz. Check your local listings for where Starz is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, www.starz.com. It's www.starz.com. Like I said, P-Valley has been getting rave reviews as not just one of this summer's best new series of any kind, but one of this best year's best new series of any kind. And I can't wait to have Brandi Evans back. I heard a lot about her performance, and the word is she is a wow, along with the rest of her cast. So, again, we're sorry that for whatever reason she couldn't be on this half hour, and we are going to reschedule her for next week's show. Well, in the meantime, ready to go right now is somebody that a lot of people believe is TV's best choreographer. The track record is clear. She is the only choreographer that has won 3 back-to-back-to-back Emmy Awards for her work, 5 back-to-back MTV Music Video Awards for her work. Her credits stem the gamut from, you know, comedies, dramas, variety shows, you name it. She's done work for it. And her current work is for the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Joining us live from Sherman Oaks, California, an interview exclusive, choreographer Margaret Derricks. Margaret, welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you so much.
It is a pleasure. And first of all, I heard the news that New York City is now back in the TV production game. I know California to some extent is. What's your sense about getting back in the swing of things doing TV choreography in either where you are or here in New York?
You know what? As soon as they say go, I'm ready. I cannot wait to get back to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know New York City is finally in phase 4 as of today, so it is all systems go as far as we know. What have you been doing? I understand you've been doing some projects while you've been waiting for the all systems go.
Oh, yeah. Through this, I've been doing a lot of virtual teaching with companies, CLI Studios, Team Illy TV. I've been doing a lot of stuff for Debbie Allen. I've been doing a lot of teaching and just kind of keeping these dancers moving during this time.
Mm-hmm. What's it been like doing that, doing virtual work?
You know, at first it was a little jarring, especially anything that's on Zoom because of the delay. But the more I did it, you know, you just kind of get used to something, and I get so much feedback from the dancers that it makes it worthwhile. It's nothing like being in the room with dancers, but it's been lovely to be there for them and to get the feedback, on how much they're enjoying everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into what we want to really get into, which is your TV work, which is an incredible track record. As you look at it, what has you do television choreography? Well, what's the exciting thing for you about choreographing for the camera?
Well, specifically for Maisel, you know, our show creators, Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino, they design such brilliant shots, not only for dance, but for the whole show, but specifically for the choreography. When I meet with them on any scene that we're getting ready to shoot, I know exactly how the camera is going to be moving before I even start creating the dance. And that is just incredible. And it's it becomes like a pas de deux between the camera and the dancers. And just having that, you know, that information before I start is really makes it really interesting and fun.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot more from Margaret Derricks about her work on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and on other TV shows as well. And we want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for Margaret, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In addition to Margaret, we will also have our new classic trivia segment. So we have a question for you. We got some nice prizes in store. So get your thinking caps on. You could be our third weekly winner in a row. It's all coming up after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to Best Internet Radio in the Galaxy, www.blogtalkradio's Frequent Tuner Radio. Together, reaching over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, every weekday morning, including tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, it's Kings in the Morning. Join Jay King and crew for great conversation, music, and a whole lot more. Kings in the Morning, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, Best of BTR and Spreaker comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Told Live. Welcome to all of you just joining us at the top of the hour. 92 degrees. We're in day three of a heat wave here in the New York metro area. And joining us live from Sherman Oaks, California, the Emmy-winning choreographer, Margaret Dirks, whose latest work is on the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning series, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel from Amazon Studios. And Margaret, just before the break, we were starting to talk about your work on that program. Does it help that Amy was a former dancer before she became a producer on shows like and creator of shows like Gilmore Girls?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, Amy knows dance. She knows how to shoot dance. You know, the conversations I have with her about the dance are just so clear because of her knowledge and her love for dance. So it does make a huge difference for sure.
If you have a question, those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, if you have a question or comment for Margaret, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and Tune Radio. And don't forget our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's ready for you, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. How fast do you and Amy come up with ideas for dance sequences? I've seen some of them in your highlight reel, and they are amazing. You know, we think of this show as about the world of stand-up comedy, and one woman, played by Rachel Brosnahan's journey through that world. We don't necessarily, for some people, the fact that this is all about choreography may come as a big surprise, but when they see these dance sequences, they are stunning.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I met Amy 8 years ago. I first worked with her on the TV show Bunheads, and then I did the reboot of Gilmore Girls with her. So we really have this really quick dialogue and understanding of each other. So all of these wonderfully kooky numbers that they come up with for Maisel, they start with Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino. You know, they are very clear with me about what, you know, what the scene is. And then, like I said, we talk about how the camera's going to move, and then I get to just fly with it and bring it all to life. It's just really, it's really easy with them because we've been working together for 8 years now.
Once they give you that scene and how long it's supposed to run, how long does it take for you to fly to come up with, all right, here's how many dancers I want, here's how I want them to move, here's the music I want to play, here's the, here's, you know, with working with Amy and Daniel and the director of photography on Maisel, here's how I want it to go.
Well, you know, television moves really fast. So, you know, once I get the information from them, I usually have 1 day to prep and 1 day for rehearsal before we are, you know, filming it. So it's, but like I said, because we have this kind of ongoing working relationship, I really understand. I understand them so well, and it's really easy for me to move that quickly. So, you know, once in a while I might get 2 days of rehearsal, but it's usually 1 day of rehearsal. And then you getting the star Rachel Brosnahan to, you know, she's so busy. Sometimes I get very little time with her before we have to put it on camera. So, you know, we all are just, we're used to working at that fast television pace.
Mm-hmm. What do you like best, whether it's on Maisel or on other shows? Do you like working with the stars of the shows or with a solo dancer or working in groups?
Oh, you know, they're all so delicious to me. I guess I really, you know, I think I get most satisfaction from working with actors, you know, because dancers, I expect dancers to come in and do exactly what I, you know, give them the first time. I think the satisfaction for me, especially working on Maisel with, you know, Rachel and the rest of the cast, is, you know, dreaming up these ideas and then seeing them not only bring it to life, but bring the humor and their characters to it. So for me, that is, it's super special. And I love dancers, but there's nothing like seeing Rachel, you know, bring my choreography to life. It's just wonderful.
Well, when you have somebody like Rachel doing the choreography or any of her fellow cast members, how do you draw actors like that out of their comfort zone? The comfort zone for them is acting, not necessarily dancing. So what do you employ in terms of giving them either a new comfort zone or like a new, you know, hurdle to successfully overcome?
Well, you know, I think I have to, it all goes back to my teaching. You know, I've been teaching since I was 12 years old, and I'm a really wonderful teacher. And that's the first quality of a good teacher is, you know, getting people to be relaxed and trust you. And with actors, what I do is I walk into the rehearsal with like a pocket full of ideas, and I don't attach myself to anything. I kind of play with them and find the moves that work best for their bodies, and I tailor it for them as opposed to a dancer where I just say, here, this is what it is, guys. You know, with the actors, I really try to tailor it to them. And now that we've, you know, done 3 seasons of Maisel with the cast, I kind of know how they move and what, you know, what they like best. I they don't have weaknesses. I've never had to change anything for any of them. They're really incredible. But it's really about going in and not saying, you know, they know that I'm there to support them and that I would make any changes if necessary. So I think they just trust me and they feel like they're in good hands. And so they just kind of go with it and give themselves over to me. And it's just really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, when you take on a project like Maisel, especially one that has an historical flavor to it, in this case, the stand-up comedy, the entertainment scene in New York of the 1950s, early 60s, how much research do you do into how that period went, the dance moves of that time, how the entertainment scene was, the whole ambiance? Because one thing I see about your work is that you really do capture in your dancing the ambiance of the period. It's not just, we're going to throw this move here and that move in, and so on and so forth, and all, you know, line up in a row. But there's a lot of ambiance. There's a lot of flavor. There's a lot of, yeah, I could see how this could happen at that time.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. It's a lot easier now. You know, when I first started my career, I was doing the Austin Powers movies, which, you know, were in the 60s. And back then when we were filming these movies, YouTube didn't exist. So I have the luxury now of just being able to do a really deep dive into, you know, there's everything out there on the internet to really, you know, that we can educate ourselves with. And I really like to go, you know, like to go to some of those, the old, old classics of the time and, you know, just keep it very authentic, but always kind of try to put a little bit of a freshness to it. But, you know, thank God for YouTube because it's all right there at our fingertips to do, you know, the research.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Emmy and award-winning choreographer Margaret Derricks. Her latest work is the 3rd season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which she has been involved with from the get-go. And she said earlier she also has been involved with the Gilmore Girls Revival for Amazon. And also part of a wonderful one-season Freeform show called Bunheads with the terrific Sutton Foster. We'll talk a little bit about that, by the way, in our next little segment. Margaret joins us live from Sherman Oaks, California, this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Apple with you live from New York. 3rd day of Heatwave NYC. 1st day of Phase 4 reopening. TV production back in business, we hope, and here to stay. If you have a question or comment for Margaret, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or you go to chat room, Simon Apple, 04 Lane. Vogel by 3 just joined us in the room. So if you have a question or comment, put in the room or make the call, and we'll be happy to hear from you. This is the first of 2 90-minute episodes of the Promo All About the Tune coming your way. We're back on Friday with another 90-minute deal for you. INSC has a very interesting show, their longest running, called The Cowboy Way, which comes back in a couple of weeks. we will have the Executive Vice President of the network, Hayes Tober, joining us. Plus, there's a brand new women's network that was announced a couple of years ago by Synodigium. That's an organization that puts together a lot of digital networks that are available on smart TV sets and smart devices. The new service premieres next month called My Time Movie Network. It's more than just movies, by the way. A lot of original programming aimed at women. Plus, they're working on a multicultural network that will launch next year. We will speak with the president of Synodigium's Networks Division, Eric Opeka. Plus, we'll introduce you a brand new service on smart TV sets that just launched called Weather Spy. It's a mix of live weather updates and a very offbeat programming menu. We'll have one of the executives stream that service, and that's all coming up on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Well, I've only experienced life with butt heads, and especially working with someone like Sutton Foster, who is a triple threat talent as it gets.
Well, Bunheads for me was such a joy. It was my first experience with Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino, but specifically working with Sutton Foster was just incredible. We got to do so many, you know, wonderful numbers, and Sutton is just, you know, she's a dancer. She can do it all. And she's one of the kindest human beings I've ever met. I mean, she's just so easy to work with and just super sweet. So it was a joy for sure.
Have you worked with her on Younger, her TV Land series?
You know what? They called me several times to come to Younger, but I was always on Maisel, so I wasn't able to come. But my assistant from Bunheads, Michelle Elkin, was able to go in, and she worked with Sutton on Younger.
Mm-hmm. Another series that you recently worked on is Westworld. And by the way, just like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, there's another husband and wife production team involved, Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy. And I did see the sequence you did for that. Is that like night and day between what you do for Maisel?
It sure is. That was fun too. And that the actress was amazing. I don't think she ever danced, which blew me away because, you know, I was able to get her to do everything without – we had a double there, but she wanted to do it all. And on that scene specifically, Westworld gave me quite a bit of time to work with her to prepare her for that scene. It was shot at night, super dramatic – A little bloody at the end, but it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Really good sequence, by the way. And
thank you so much.
How did you get into the world of TV choreography? What was your breakthrough?
I started with movies. I think after Austin Powers, everything kind of opened up for me. And back then, I was doing. That 70s show, Third Rock from the Sun, you know, a lot of sitcoms and big TV specials. I don't remember, maybe Third Rock from the Sun, which I won my first Emmy for, might have been the first, you know, sitcom that I really, like, that I got connected to and you know, just kind of blew it up for me.
Mm-hmm. How'd that happen? And working with somebody like John Lithgow, who is another wonderful talent, who just seems to, no matter what the role is, he's just superb.
You know, John, how delightful, and, you know, a real mover, too. The thing I loved about Third Rock that I remember is, because I worked with them for several years and on quite a few different shows, and the excitement that the cast would have when they knew I was coming to set, because they loved to dance. They loved to sing and dance, all of them. And I just felt so special because they were like kids, like, oh, it's dance day. They would just get so excited when they knew that I was coming to work with them. And, you know, John Lithgow really led that show. He was such a great leader and just a joy.
Do you find, Margaret, over your career, whether it's TV or movies, that you're drawn to particular types of projects? You mentioned Austin Powers, which is this comedy satire of spy, you know, super James Bond spy spoofs, or A Third Rock from the Sun, which is a very offbeat comedy, or in the case of Marvelous Miss Maisel, it's actually a sort of autobiographical type recreation of a of an art form, like stand-up comedy, and how it evolved, you know, in a particular time of American history. I'm wondering, are you drawn, is there something in your psyche that says, I'm drawn to this, I'd like to do more of these kind of shows in your career?
You know, I love it all. I'm drawn to Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino. I would work with them the rest of my life. They are, for me, my creative, you know, god and goddess. They're just so fun to work with. Their style of comedy is just so intriguing to me. The storytelling that I get to do with the choreography and the design of the shots, I think that is what I'm drawn to the most. But I like it all, and I like doing dramas. I like to do TV and film and then bounce to Broadway and Vegas. So I like variety for sure. But if I were to pick a favorite, it would be anything Palladino.
Is there a particular piece of television choreography you've done, apart from Maisel, that you wish people would see more? I know you've done all sorts of shows, including some syndicated shows. I believe you worked with Fame LA, which was a one-year version of Fame.
Yeah, I loved Fame LA. We did some wonderful, wonderful things on that show. There was a piece I did that I won my third Emmy for. It was the Goodwill Games, which was a 15-minute piece that Frank Wildhorn wrote for me. And I had 30 dancers, 15 were from New York and 15 were from L.A., and we danced it on a outside live in front of the World Trade Center, but when it was there. And it was probably, for me, one of the most artistic things I've ever done. I wish that more people could see that, because I would love to do more of that. It was just, I guess it was kind of, you know, I grew up wanting to be a ballet dancer, a concert dancer. It really allowed me to do a lot of that and showcase that side of my work.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Goodwill Games. That was the project that was brought by Ted Turner for TNT every 4 years between the U.S. and Russia. It was a very good competition. Then, of course, it was retired. But it was great that you got involved with that competition and got an Emmy Award for that. You mentioned that you see a lot on YouTube. One of the things about YouTube is that we're now able to see some of the classic variety shows from television's early decades, whether it is the Texaco Star Theater or your show of shows or the Gary Moore Show, the Carol Burnett Show. Does that at all inspire your work at all, seeing some of the old variety shows on YouTube?
You know, I remember before YouTube, was it Hullabaloo? It was a variety show that I watched. I did a Gap commercial that kind of made me a little famous overnight. It was the Gap Go-Go commercial, and it was inspired by Hullabaloo, and it was a one-er. It was all in one shot. But yeah, I do love to look at the old variety shows. What great stuff, you know, really great stuff. And I hope to dive deeper into them as we continue on with Maisel.
I tell you, Margaret, I remember Hullabaloo and Shindig also, which was, they were at the same time. They were the first rock and roll variety shows in prime time. The American Bandstands, if you will, of their day. They didn't last, unfortunately, long, only about a year or 2 years. But they had some very good dancers on those shows, both of them. And,
they did.
I believe Kerry Garr came out of what I think Kerry Garr came out of Hullabaloo. I think Anita Mann, who became a choreographer on Solid Gold, she came out of Shindig. There were really good dancers that had wonderful careers starting on those variety shows. And if there was, by the way, a TV show that of the 60s. I think people should see again. I'm so thrilled YouTube has the Gary Moore Show. Their dance numbers, I think it was Ernest Flatt that was the choreographer on it, they are marvelous, especially these wonderful end-of-show programs called That Wonderful Year, where every episode they would have a specific year highlighted, and some of the work on that show, done on the fly, is just spectacular.
Now, did you say that was the Gary Moore Show?
Gary Moore Show, yeah. Ran on CBS from like 1958 to 1964. That was the show that Catherine had her big...
Well, I'm going to go back and watch that and Shindig, which I've never heard of, when we get off of this call. I love your knowledge of just everything. It's so wonderful. So thank you. I'm going to go study both of those.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Marvin. That's one of the beauties of YouTube. It's really become a repository for great dance history on television, whether it is, as I said, variety shows, dance specials. I think the Fred Astaire specials are on YouTube that he did with Barry Chase in the late 50s. Also, there is Fred Astaire did an episode of Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theater called Think Pretty with Barry Chase. And I think there is a sequence from that episode that's toward the end of the hour. That's really nice. Sort of like,
I'm going to check that. I'm taking notes.
Really nice.
Awesome. Wow. Thank you.
What would you say, Margaret, is like your highlight beyond Maisel, before doing Maisel? What was some of your other TV highlights? And Nunheads, what are some of your other TV highlights that you are particularly proud of?
I loved working with the Will and Grace cast. Oh, my God, there's been so many. I think, you know, I like the comedies that I did, like Will and Grace, Third Rock from the Sun, That 70s Show.
By the way, speaking of Will and Grace, what kind of time did you have there, given the quality of that cast?
What kind of time did I have? Do you mean to put it together, or
what kind of a time did you have in terms of putting the choreography together for that? The experience of doing that show with Deborah Messing and Megan Mullally and so forth.
I really got to work with Megan, and it was she is just a blast. I also I did a campaign for. Not Gap, their sister company. It wasn't a Gap campaign. It was another campaign with Megan. She just was just amazing. I also loved my work on GLOW. I started the fourth season of GLOW the day that they shut us down, and I really loved that. And there was a show I did called Blunt Talk with Patrick Stewart that I did for two seasons for Stars, and that was one of my faves as well.
Well, the great news is that you can see Margaret's work right now on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, third season, now around on smart TV sets and smart devices, of course, produced by Amazon, and I'm happy to say produced here in New York. And if you want more details about the series, as well as all the other original shows that Amazon does, for Amazon Prime, here's where you go, www.amazonstudios.com and www.amazon.com. And hopefully that fourth season GLOW will be coming soon on Netflix. And for more details about that, netflix.com. Margaret, it has been a joy to have you on this program. Congratulations on all your work with Maisel, and looking forward to the fourth season GLOW, which should be on before the end of the year. And hopefully now that New York City is back on for TV business, that hopefully you'll be back in New York soon and doing much more with Maisel and other things too.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here, Margaret. All the greatest to you and everybody on Maisel. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Margaret Derricks, the choreographer on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and a whole lot more, joining us live from Sherman Oaks, California. Well, as promised, we have a brand-new classic trivia question for you, and if you are first with the correct answer, you will get two prizes. One, just out, Discovery's new real-life sticker book, dealing with the ocean, with more than 400 stickers just in time for their latest Shark Week. And the TED original, based on tech talk by Stephen L. Pedranik, is How We'll Live on Mars. And here's our brand new question. What 1995 television series was adapted from a John Grisham novel? What 1995 television series was adapted from a John Grisham novel? Here's a hint. The star in that series Joe Beth Williams. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your full email and address. And once again, congratulations to Stephen Tillman from Jersey City, New Jersey, for being our second winner in a row. If you want to be our third, well, get involved. simonapple04@yahoo.com. If we don't get a winner by the end of the day, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook, where we now have over 2,500 followers, and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWDT. That's UBCSimonTWDT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so. And who knows, sooner than later, you might be our third classic trivia winner in a row. Want to thank all my guests for being here. Again, we apologize for Brandi Evans from P-Valley not being here on today's show. We will reschedule her for next week. Don't forget, coming up on Friday, we will have Haynes Cobbler from INSP's popular series, The Cowboy Way, Eric Opeka from Cinegym Networks, that will be playing out a brand new service called My Time Movie Network next month, a new multicultural service, original programming, early in 2021, and a whole lot more, too. Plus, we'll discuss a brand new service that just came out on smart TV sets and smart devices called WeatherSpy. Remember, if you came in late on today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, and a lot of people did yesterday, we had over 110 replays of our program just on Blog Talk Radio alone. Well, all you got to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, all of our programs this year are available on podcast at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. And if you're going to TuneIn or iHeartRadio's websites, put Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, then do the clicking, and you get our episodes right then and there. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our episode today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going, including TV choreography? I'd love to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're from, particularly if you're going to be invited to our classic trivia question of the week. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. At Facebook, it's Simon Applebaum, pure and simple. Remember, however you communicate, I do communicate within 24 hours back to you. Why? Because now more than ever, what you say matters. And once again, if you're in an area that's dealing with the heat wave, please, if you're going out before the end of the day, take your time, give yourself extra time, check in on your loved ones, take it slow. Make sure you hydrate yourself as much as possible, because we want you back here for our next episode on Friday. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Amanda Lynn. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Steinberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought today by Oro.com and Amazon Division. Remember, what will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audio book, wellness material, and a whole lot more, and one must call too, it's audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Please stay safe. And if you're in New York City, remember, we're now in phase four, so please keep wearing the mask, keep social distancing. We're going to get rid of it sooner or later, and sooner if you follow the guidelines. We'll be back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and Friday, please make it safe and make it great. And now more than ever, we will lift this pandemic. And we'll do it forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.